did the lawyer,
the attorney guy?
You mean Keith Sugar?
Yeah.
Keith, unfortunately, he was struggling to make it here, but his grandfather's in the hospital, just had a hospital problem, so he's actually rushed to the hospital to be with his grandfather.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But we did play a little bit of Keith Sugar earlier, and hopefully we'll be able to have him on at a later point.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Thank you,
Mo. Sorry to hear that, man.
All right.
Hey, good luck.
All right, keep the poetry coming.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, hey, we need some poetry here. We need some songs, but most of all, we need some significant protest and some public outrage around these issues, because unfortunately, that really is the only thing that elected politicians listen to, and policemen as well, I might add. When people show up in numbers and they express themselves strongly and vigilantly, then suddenly Celia Scott does become the mayor, in spite of Scott Kennedy's plan to have her removed and have somebody else put in as mayor. You know, then suddenly things do begin to happen, because the people that put these people in office are suddenly saying, yeah, we aren't too busy to get off our butts and get down there and do something about this. That's really an important thing to do. And for all you folks listening and working on this issue to make sure that the beach area of Santa Cruz isn't given away to a greedy private corporation, I'm glad. I want to point out that Brimstone and Fire is going to be playing Saturday, May 23rd at Palookaville in a benefit for the Beach Flats community. That's going to be happening again Saturday, May 23rd. That's in 3 days at 1133 Pacific Avenue in downtown Santa Cruz. Doors open at 8:30. Show starts at 9. Tickets are $12.50 in advance. $14 at the door. Bring children under 12, and they are free. Actually, 12 and under. Part of the proceeds will go to legal fees to save our native lands and the Beach Flats community, as well as We will as a nonprofit working to give creative employment to our youth, and someone's got to train the writers of these flyers, I'll tell you. In any case, again, that's Saturday, May 23rd, Palookaville benefit to deal with this. And phone numbers we'll give you in a moment, but here's an incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, and not only will we be able to enjoy Brimstone and Fire, but we will have a few words from Dan Hamburg, who's going to be in town. He's a Green candidate for governor, and he's coming to this event to support the Beach Flats neighborhood and to help try to save Beach Flats.
Wow. And I also understand, caller, that you've been working with the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, to draw in yet a third issue, and you're in last week trying to make sure that initiative, which would make it legal for homeless people to sleep in some areas of the city and to cover up with blankets, can't seem to get past the Mike Rotkin veto, but maybe it can get passed through the voters. Huh?
Well, I'm no doubt in our minds on the ballot it will pass. There's been a major shift, I think, in change of heart and shift of consciousness. And plus, I think the initiative clearly defines, what the human rights violation part of it is. The social service aspects of camping and all the services that homeless people, that would really help the larger homeless community, are important, but we did keep it down to the very basic human rights violations, so people can see that pretty clearly.
Oh, it seemed to me that the right to sleep is an essential that you cannot divorce from the right to live,
Yeah, we'll have a table there at the Brimstone and Fire event, as well as a green table, which sort of overlaps.
All right.
Come on, come on, Palookaville, 9 o'clock Saturday night. Let's save the Beach Flats. Hey, this is serious business, and it's going to take a people power. We may have to be laying in the streets, blocking the bulldozers, because these people are rushing this stuff faster and faster. I remember when it was a 14-year, 15-year, 20-year schedule. Now it's like an 8-year schedule, and now it's like they're ready voting on basketball, courts and so forth. They're already voting on parts of it. Hey, this is going to be happening a lot faster than people think. We need to really get out there and force, say no, not here.
Thank you, David.
Sure.
What do you got to say to that, Kevin?
Yeah, that's true. I appreciate you calling in. We have precious few people at these meetings, like the city council meetings. It's frightening. I look around and there's, the last meeting I was at last week, there were three of us there who, in the city council meeting who got up and said something. And most of the time there are more, but we really need, the city council people are just looking at the same faces, the same half dozen faces at every meeting, and of course you just get counted as people that don't count. Then, and if they get fresh faces showing up, and, you know, people that they think, you know, deserve a little bit better. I think it'll be great. The more people that show up, the more valid it's going to be, and there's never a better time than now.
Well, you know, a lot of people get discouraged because even if you do show up at city council, you get treated, as you've seen, like you're an idiot if your viewpoint is not that of the prefabricated agenda. Often that's the case, not always, of course, at the city council. And so I think what's really needed is to recognize the reality is that you have an intransigent city council. You have a city council that has taken a position and doesn't want to change it. And the only way to change it is to let them know that they are going to be changed, that the community is not going to tolerate essentially a usurpation of the democratic process. And one way to do that, of course, is to pack the council chambers. But that's kind of hard for people. Just sort of, you know, they'll show up. I mean, dozens of people showed up to speak about Pelton Street. And look what happened to them. Where did they go? They evaporated. Then dozens more circulated a petition to get 5,500 signatures, 5,300 signatures, which apparently fell short. And again, by a process of counting that some people regard as questionable. But certainly the numbers of people who signed this petition was unquestioned. There was a huge number of people who signed it, and the city council chose to completely ignore it and essentially divvy up the property between the $700,000 folks and get rid of the trees in the process, violating their own, you know, tree law, and essentially, you know, winking and nodding to the Parks and Rec Commission. The commission, to its credit, stood strong, but it's Jim Lang and his little squad of city council asslickers, if you'll forgive me for being so graphic, moved right in, you know, and suddenly, you know, even the very, anything that will stop the city council is being bulldozed over. That seems to be the reality of it. And I don't know what the best answer is. I continue to, you know, look, kind of pick at straws as he try recalling one of them. If you can focus all your efforts behind one of them, that the very effort to do that, I think, would send a message to every one of the rest of them, that at least during that period of time, they would stop, their arrogance would suddenly take a step backward. And that's just my thought. And I wonder if the community has any thoughts on that, whether they think that a recall, even if you haven't got the perfect candidate lined up to replace whoever you're getting rid of, you know, even if you aren't sure you're going to win, the very act of educating the community is a positive thing to do. And of course, you know, we all have many things we have to do, and that's a consideration, and many of us are doubly burnt out from trying different causes, but it's still something I think certainly could be tried. It's the most, to me, it's the next logical step. Any thought on that?
Yeah, it seems like, well, I know that Scott Kennedy, this is the end of his term. He can't run again. I did vote for him, and I did vote for Rockin when he first ran. I had wised up, however, when it was time to vote for Hernandez and other people. But I really have to admit that I was extremely unwatchful. I just assumed that since, you know, they were who you think they were, you know, like Rockin being a so-called feminist and communist and, you know, UCSC community studies person and, you know, that he would be thinking more about people and people's rights. And you would think that since Scott Kennedy was connected with the Resource Center, which I used to, you know, have something to do with, but no more, you would think that he would have been, you know, somebody for democratic process, which in all of the doings I hear that he's involved in, there's a lack of that. But, you know, I think if we give it a big shot and put people in there who are really into democratic process and not just on the surface, that we will save ourselves a lot of this running around like chickens with our heads cut off trying to be on the defense of what they're attacking. I think it will pay off in the end.
You know, I think that's really important. I mean, all the energy that you and others are having to put into fighting what seems to be an obviously ill-prepared and apparently bad plan should be used in devising a great plan, mm-hmm. that everybody can get together on and agree with, and that really takes the combined wisdom of the people who've lived in the area for the last 20 or 30 years to come up with new and valuable alternatives. And you know, I mean, I guess, you know, I get little flashes of hope when I see the yellow bike plan idea, which I like, you know, and things of that sort. But I mean, I think the problem that a lot of us have, and the problem I have, is it's a lot of us, we're just naysayers. You know, we're in a position where we have to spend so much time fighting to stop them from selling everything out from under our feet, or removing every basic right, so that not only can't sit down on the mall, you can't peacefully ask for a dime after dark. If you fall asleep, you're going to get arrested. I mean, there should be a more positive approach where we're looking for ways to include parts of the community that are excluded. And instead of doing that, we're faced with a situation where merchants and politicians catering to merchants and, I guess, developers are writing the agenda for the city. You know, and that is something that I think can be dealt with in a number of ways. One way is, I think, for folks, for example, who are around a particular issue, because you know you are organizing around this issue, get a radio show, and you can do that on this free radio station, and every week talk about these issues more broadly. I mean, I'm talking about them, but they aren't really the center of my show, because I'm more interested, again, in civil rights for poor people, which certainly is involved, because you're kicking out lots of low-income people in the beach flats, and when you deny, when people of middle-class background, when residents are so cavalierly treated, you can bet they're going to kick the butts of people who've got even less political power in this community in basic issues of human rights. So, you know, certainly it has an impact. But I think what you can do is get your own show. I think you can, you know, publish the kind of Epicenter Weekly that you're doing. I understand there's a new newspaper about the Alternative Lighthouse Press, or the Lighthouse Press, that's coming out soon. Get a column in that every week. That's a possibility. I encourage people to come to this Brimstone and Fire benefit on the 23rd at Palookaville at 8:30. Starts at 9. Phone numbers, by the way, contact Lisa at 423-9843 or Una at 426-7315. And if you want those numbers again, you can call after the show. The one number, kind of the magic number to call if you've missed any numbers, is 423-HUFF. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization that I work with. Well, I'm not going to cut you off, but I'm going to kind of turn to some other stuff. You're welcome to hang with me, Catherine. Thank you for coming in here and you know, being with us. Is there any final things you want to say before you go? You don't have to. It's, you know, you've done fine.
No, I don't have anything burning. I've already said it all, but I just want to thank your listeners and thank the people that called in. And that Lighthouse newspaper, I've heard some good things about it. From my housemate Nick, and he's writing some articles for it right now, and they sound really good to me, so keep your eyes open for that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Catherine. You've been listening to Catherine Gunderson, thank you. Gunderson here, who...
I'll let you drink it because
we've all got to, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. The water has arrived in the studio. I'm about to jump in and take a swim here. While I'm doing that, thanks again, Catherine. Let's turn to a report from a man on the street, Skidmark Bob Duran, down on the mall in Santa Cruz, who we ran into today. As I was walking down Pacific Avenue. He's been covering the situation with, some of you may know, Free Radio Santa Cruz has been under some recent close scrutiny by the Federal Communications Commission. They came by on Saturday, and they tried to get in here to investigate, to inspect the equipment. They were told by a 12-year-old who was guarding the premises, "Go get a search warrant, please," and they left. Thank you again, Rachel, for doing that good work. Anyway, unfortunately, in the same 5 or 6 days since then, three free radio stations within a 40-mile radius of here, maybe it's a 70-mile radius, have been shut down by the FCC, I should say by threats emanating from the FCC. One in Los Gatos, one in Hayward, and I believe one in San Jose. And we're going to talk a little bit with Skidmark Bob about that and about certain problems on the mall in Santa Cruz. Let's hear him now.
Hey, it's 1:25. We're on the sidewalk downtown Pacific Avenue, right outside Graphics, with Skidmark Bob and his young son. Hi, Skidmore.
Well, hi there.
And you say that you've been keeping a weather eye across the street on Alibaba's Cafe?
Well, I was just, you know, happened to be in the area, minding my own business as usual. And I noticed that I saw, what was his name? I forget which officer it was, but he was signing a complaint with Alibaba against some of the people that hang out over here. Some people call hippie planner now, but over here at the Where Are We Lincoln in the Pacific, where people have been pushed down, further down to this part of the mall, and in order to have community and hang out. And so he signed a complaint, and the woman was being cited, and as she was being cited, Officer Over, and then Evelith, and then three other officers, so there was about eight officers here, telling the people, Officer Over said they couldn't sit around that sculpture, but it was illegal to sit around it, not leaning against it. He said it was conduct, or it was part of the conduct ordinance. You can't sit around an art sculpture.
Sit on the sidewalk around an art sculpture.
Around an art sculpture. I said, no, that's only for asking for change, far as I know. He just ignored me completely and scared these people off that were playing music, not bothering anybody, not asking for spare change, just hanging out, playing
music.
What
time of day was this, Bob?
Oh, during farmer's market, so around 3 in the afternoon.
And who seemed to be initiating this?
Well, first Alibaba, I believe he came over and started yelling at some of the kids from what I got. I got some of it on tape of the interaction between the officer and some of the people there. But as they waited, more and more police started showing up. So I had like about 8 officers to deal with one noise ticket, which wasn't that big a deal to deal with to begin with. And then they just were there to drive the people away.
About what time of day?
3. And then I went to Food Not Bombs, where this gentleman was telling me he's been harassed for camping. I'm not sure what night, but they're in a camper, and the police told them to come out, and they wanted a badge number, and they said they'd give them business cards, and they had jackets covering over their badge, and they wouldn't give them their name or number, and they never did. And
did they give them a ticket, or?
No, they just harassed them, told them to move along.
Inside or outside city limits?
It was inside city limits. It was Santa Cruz Police Department.
So it was subject to the notorious anti-sleeping ban.
Exactly. The same gentleman had a problem with some of the out-of-town yuppies that came for the Art and Wine Festival and almost got physically accosted, actually did get physically accosted by them, calling them this and that, and so, you know, and it turned into a little fight and scuffle, and the police showed up to that too, and I was outside of Eric's Deli, and this woman evidently brought a bottle out and tried to hit this person with it, and he just defending himself, and due to the witnesses that were inside the building that saw, they didn't haul away the homeless people that were the ones being assaulted by these upscale yuppies.
You know, during wine festivals, it's traditional to, haven't you heard of throw the bottle at the homeless person?
yeah, it was a bottle of whiskey, though, and it went bouncing off his arm and crashed all over the sidewalk.
Well, that might be a waste of good whiskey.
But yeah, he thought it was, he was, first of all, he was sitting there with a gentleman that had his face tattooed, and this woman walked up and grabbed his face and said, nice work, he's all, but you're an asshole, and
the woman was drunk, or?
No, she wasn't drunk. She was just, I don't know, with this better than thou attitude, and proceeded to accost this man, and so they got into a big argument, and then one thing led to another, and they started into this little scuffle, and finally the police showed up, and you know, luckily they were going to arrest the guy if there wasn't any witnesses. I'm sure they would have arrested him because it turned into the woman hit the guy in the face, and so he hit her.
Right.
And so then they charge battery against each other, and we'll see what happens in court, if it ever does go to court. But who knows?
So, even though summer is here, well, I guess perhaps summer is here and things are heating up.
Yes, it's that time of year. It's like about this time of year when the tourists start coming back that they start driving out the homeless. I also notice along the freeways, Caltrans is doing their little yard work out there, so they're driving a lot of the homeless people like from under the bridges and stuff like that. I mean, not like going in there with cops, but as soon as they start cutting around, the homeless people realize what's going on, and so now they're moving in to the inner city. So I'm noticing a lot more people homeless people, even, you know, addicts, heroin addicts that would rather be somewhere else secluded. Now they're out here, you know, amongst the populace. And so now there's going to be more pressure for the police to come down on people for camping and that kind of thing. It's that time of year, you know.
It is that time of year. Have you heard anything from young people about gangs on campus or gang stuff happening in Santa Cruz?
I don't know that much stuff about gangs here in Santa Cruz, personally. I know there are gangs, you know, but, I mean, they're a little more low-key, it seems to me, in Santa Cruz. I mean, I haven't had any problems with them. The biggest gang I've had a problem with is the Santa Cruz,
blue shirts with
Santa Cruz police.
Yeah, a well-armed bunch with radio contact between them and city endorsement, I might add.
Yeah, and they got their gang colors, too.
You do indeed. You got to be careful not to show those gang colors or wave your toy guns around too vigorously.
Yep.
And that was Skidmark Bob. Skidmark on the avenue today, down on Pacific Avenue. We actually were about to play a follow-up. We actually talked to some young folks at Safeway to get their sense of where things are at. We're talking about young folks, kind of eighth grade type folks. But entering the studio, in spite of numerous disabilities and a very grumbly and apparently nauseated disposition today, is our man about city council, David Silva. Actually, he was going to be a city council member, but he decided he'd rather stick with the rest of us. Or I guess the police decided that they'd rather he stuck with the rest of us. Hi, David.
I'm not at liberty to speak about my law case at this time.
Actually, David was assaulted by Sergeant Andy Crane in September of 1996. At a demonstration, a peaceful but noisy demonstration where homeless protesters locked themselves to furniture at City Hall. And David, though not a part of the demonstration, when trying to retrieve petitions that had been essentially thrown to the ground when one of the folks who had been demonstrating was assaulted by a police officer, he was himself assaulted and then thrown out the door into a pillar and suffered numerous injuries. And you actually, and you're not talking about this, so I'm not asking any questions, because I know your attorney has advised you not to talk about it, but there is indeed a real lawsuit going on with real consultations between the city, and it is really in court, which is a rarity. I mean, you hear a lot of instances of reported police abuse on the station in my show. Rarely do you see them followed up, as I believe you have been following them up with your attorney. But let's turn back to what we were going to be talking about today, which we would hope to have Scott Kennedy in the studio. And for those of you who have tuned in, Scott Kennedy has canceled out. Although, who knows? He's also given us a light of hope, if we want to let ourselves be tantalized by that.
Scott, come on in. Come on down,
come
Scott.
Come on down, Scott. That's what David Silva says. He's inviting you to join the group. You can sit on David's lap here, or vice versa. There's a great cartoon, again, that I guess I talked about earlier in the show, where Scott is hugging Mike Rotkin in a developer jamboree around the Beach Flats issue. But I guess it's not just the Beach Flats. This is really talks about all kinds of development issues. The Beach Flats isn't the only issue here, is it, David? There are other issues of development. There's the, what did you call it, the Gateway Project. There's the Pelton Street property. These have attracted your interest for the last year or so. And then what's coming up? What's on the agenda?
Well, they've been attracting my interest for longer than a couple of years. It seems that they have many starts and stops and processes and appearances in any way of public input and staff review. What has been victories for neighborhood communities and groups interested in us having sustainable growth rather than this take the money and run folks from out of town kind of growth are just seeing the same unresolved development issues come over and over again with this question, with presenting the city council constantly with questions about the development. Well, the questions are bad. The questions are what's wrong. We need not to have these new questions about whether we should have this development plan that won't work, or this development plan that won't work, or this development plan, all of which, you know, have lack, even by the most pro-development EIRs, lack the ability to be sustainable when it comes to water, to be sustainable when it comes to so many issues like traffic and sewage. And this is a growth problem. It's very complex. The city, the people that live here know it's complex because they're part, and they walk through and they maneuver through the problems with traffic, and they deal with the problems of water. We are the ones that are wasting the water. We use 900 million gallons more of water than we're supposed to, and we're at peak water right now. We are facing an La Nina, which may be one of the worst La Ninas in history, which will be a big serious drought. So for us to have all this development plans that are not really development plans that are local community, local economy developing, they are really putting money in the coffers of the city bureaucracy, and therefore it motivates the staff to continue that kind of work. Each of us, each citizen of Santa Cruz, consider ourselves the staff of operating the city of Santa Cruz too. We don't have full-time council members. We don't have an elected mayor. We have a city manager who, I don't know what bed he sleeps in when it comes to developers. Maybe he's just a fairly good Mandarin, just managing the process that's coming down the pike. But what's coming down the pike is an entire long series of development projects that are not sustainable, that will turn us into a Disneyland peekaboo, look at the nature kind of place, with a beachfront that will be what I've called a Miami Vice joyride, with all that implies, crime, the ugliness, and the type of tourists that would attract. The basic tourists that come to Santa Cruz are more like honeymoon couples that come from Alameda that really can't afford to go to the Caribbean. For us to put posh Miami-style hotels and convention centers with all this false plaque facing out towards the city and calling that the replication of historical heritage, when really that just is a big giant 4-foot wall gate facing Second Street, where there used to be, where there would have been, what once upon a time had been houses that house a lot of disabled, a lot of poor people, and now are going to be single units stacked up upon each other and erasing the fire lane. The beach flats complication goes on and on, but it just shows how far these developers can go. And then the politicians come in with their sort of priorities. Oh, their supposed youth gang clearing up priorities, which end up putting them into police state mentality operations, that they get locked in these narrow corners of thinking, and they think that putting basketball courts in a inner city Miami style environment will get rid of drugs. I'm sorry, that will increase the drug circulation and bring it back into the beach flats, the neighborhoods, and the neighbors in the beach flats. Flats, not lower ocean. Flats, not the riverbank, which is now a police modified and controlled drug distribution center. Now that it's no longer that regular people can go on the flats in the evening, it's now the police department's own private, you know, new place where people can go and get drugs, and there's more drug activity there than ever. The council really messed up on that one. And you know, parks should have known better. These people that are running our government are really out of touch with the neighborhoods. They're out of touch with common people. They're out of touch with poor people, that's for sure. They're out of touch with people that live in the neighborhoods that they affect. When it comes to road bumps and special requests, they seem to be very, very much in touch and responsive to the richer neighborhoods and the landowners. But the city council is not in touch with the problems of people as they are in real life. And these development projects and how they let the city planning and city staff get away with putting gloss and cover up to make things sound politically correct and touchy-feely nice is disgraceful. And it's time to better wake up. And as your earlier guest was saying, perhaps it's time for us to, like, you know, have a Celia Scott slate. Perhaps it's time for us to recall some politicians. I personally believe the recalls don't work until you catch them with their hands in the till. And maybe we have one city council person, I won't mention that name at this time, who has been caught with her hand in the till in the past, and that would be the most effective recall, unless she's able to answer for what she did, you know, taking money from a developer and then voting the next week to benefit that developer. That story's never been resolved. For 2 years it's been hanging over this community, and it's been a dark cloud over of corruption over the city council. There's some politicians that you can say, you know, are taking the non-progressive line. They're not taking the positions that they were elected for, who have compromised way beyond any reason, rationalized, using various economic reasons to rationalize themselves into being in alliance with developers, falling for schemes of breaking up the Bombay property into something that will actually end up being estates for millionaires that will interrupt our free access. All these kind of things that they've done, they've rationalized, and perhaps they can answer to, and then may see the light. But I don't think of those as those kind of breaches as successful in recall campaigns. I think you have to pretty much catch them with the hand in the till, or it just be so obnoxious to everybody. But usually that's something that happens all fast. I've been working with some people that are trying to make progressives in this town, so-called progressives, more accountable, and also at the same time trying to find common ground between liberals and radicals, because where progressive is the common ground between the liberals and radicals in this town. And if we can't have that common ground, there won't be any progressivism.
Well, that's
you asked me a question, did you?
Yes, you didn't answer the question about what specific other redevelopment projects are really kind of that we should be paying a lot of attention to. I think you did, but I think you gave a very good overview of what was going on. You actually felt, I guess, there was a victory with the Fishhook situation, right?
Yes. I feel that the project that was presented by the state the first time with the $60 million...
Clarify for our listeners what the Fishhook is.
Okay, well, the Fishhook, for most of you that live in Santa Cruz, know that when you come into up Highway 17 from the south or over 17, you're faced with this enormous, sharp, curving Fishhook off of South Highway 1, coming north. Onto Ocean or over to one going north, and 17 sort of merges right in between the two of those alternatives, and it seems a pretty awkward way for traffic to merge. It kind of does stop and bottle things up, but the solutions provided by Caltrans at first were just enormous giant sound walls and enormous flying buttresses everywhere. It required that they have only one lane coming off of 17 onto Ocean, only one lane coming on off of Ocean onto 17, only one lane going onto Highway 1 South. It was a real boondoggle as far as actually solving the Fishhook part of the problem. But what they added on to it was widening of the freeway all the way, you know, down towards Aptos and all the way across San Lorenzo River up towards the Gateway Project. And increasing the speeds and adding lanes that would make coming from Scotts Valley even a more speed zone. People need to slow down once they hit Scotts Valley, because they're coming to Santa Cruz, and we do things just a little slower here. That's why it's still beautiful. And they came up with this modified version, $30 million plan, sometimes $32 million, depending on which combination of elements. But the elements that they had didn't address the Fishhook. It only really was the beginning of a framework to set in a super freeway coming through from Watsonville to Half Moon Bay, and there's no way that they could admit that it would do anything else. If you pave it, they will park here. You know, if you increase and widen the freeways, there will still be just as much traffic going out on the side streets. It's nowhere in the United States has there ever been a place where they made the freeway wider that it didn't increase traffic on the roadsides, neighborhood roadside streets, as well as the freeway.
And in fact, however, the good guys won this one, right?
Yes, and thanks to Mike Rotkin, he found the economic, logical argument that not only defeated this, but also saved the $30 million into a fund that we'd be able to use for ourselves. It was quite astute of him. Everybody else on the Regional Transportation Commission didn't think that was possible and was ready to write it off. I think even the staff was ready to write off the $30 million, but Mike Rockham was able to find that, and I congratulate him for that. I think his analysis served
a broader, you know, ecological wisdom, but it was narrow, but it was useful.
What about Scott Kennedy in that situation?
Scott also voted to just give up on this ridiculous plan. Didn't have too much to say before the vote. I think one of the most interesting comments was actually from Walt Simon. He argued very, very strongly that we defeat this project and then voted for it.
Walt Simon, of course, is one of the conservative supervisors. So it seems that in not every case are Kennedy and Rotkin voting at least in a way that you consider to be deleterious to our Santa Cruz scene here.
Yeah, well, I don't know the machinations behind the scene of who says, you better damn well straight vote for this or you're not going to get any support from us this time. But I think Marty Warmhart was very, very, very strong on this not working, and she heard loud that, you know, the Committee for an Improved Fish Hook did have alternative solutions, and the alternative solutions were like 60,000 instead of 60 million, and that these solutions would actually work better than what the Caltrans was planning. And also, Catherine Byers was constantly, very, very much constantly analyzing and saying, no, you're not raising, you're not lowering this flyover, you're just simply raising the ground from which it rises. So it'll still be just as much of an ugly mess as you've created, and she constantly challenged it. And we are much in gratitude to Jeff Almquist, who waited to the end and listened to everything and just said, yeah, this thing won't work, forget it.
So could the same kind of process happen around Beach Flats? Could the same kind of reasonable discussion happen, or is it set in concrete? What's your sense, David?
This is quite different. With the Beach Flats, you know, we have ourselves to fight with. We don't have outside. Some people made it easier for them to blame Caltrans. Some people made it easier for them to blame the Regional Transportation Commission staff or different parts, different areas of the county involved in the Regional Transportation staff. You know, it broke down pretty much against, as I would say, Scotts Valley and the businessmen association and so forth, against people that were representing neighborhoods and communities, people who were representing business interests and so forth. It broke down along those lines. When it comes to Beach Flats, you have the Seaside Company interests, which are big. When it comes to Beach Flats, you have a temporary construction interest, perhaps, that might be big, and contracts that plumbers might get. You have a lot of potential for some take the money and run kind of profit, and you have the very ugly, unconscious part of Santa Cruz that wants to make it pretty and do away with ugly-looking people and do away with old-looking houses that aren't the heritage houses of the rich, but the heritage houses of the poor. The heritage, you know, poor people do have heritage too. And so we have all these forces, and we're going to be fighting amongst ourselves about it. I'm hoping it's a long and studied process, and that we can all be very civil. I think that the people that have worked on presenting the plan have modified and modified and modified, and no matter how much they modify, it still comes down to, this is a Miami Vice joyride for Seaside Company. It's going to be bad for the environment. It's going to be bad for community. It's going to be bad for creating homelessness. It's going to be bad for displacing people. It's going to be bad for setting up a kind of community we want. It's going to be bad for affecting the general plan and changing the percentage of how much affordable housing we have to have, although affordable housing very seldom is affordable. It's going to change the percentage of it's going to change our priorities if we lose this one. It's the big fight that all the other little developments have sort of been aiming at. You know, the whole Gateway project, if this project is done, can actually be seen as...
The Gateway project, of course, is the project for developing a couple of blocks near Highway 1 and Highway 9 intersection, right?
Yeah, where they took out the log cabin, and it's all there along the river, and it'll be seen from the freeway. It's not going to be a super freeway like I guess some developers thought, where they'd be seen from. They develop a river street, so there'll be more flow through into the downtown area. I personally think they failed because it was an impossible task that couldn't be done. If this flow through, however, does send people in through the downtown area, basically this Beach Flats development is with the depot layout and the reaching wrapping around with the other hotel besides the convention center would make from River Street and 9 all the way down Pacific Avenue, curving over around and into the Seaside Company's turf. So it's a way of funneling people that we already get out of the downtown business, local community economy, into where our tax economy. Of course, when you're talking about taxing people and operations like the Seaside Company, you're taxing gypsies in a way. You know, they're dealing with coins. Any operation that deals with coins more than currency is very, very hard to tax. And historically, I would say that's how a lot of, let's say, less than legal operations are able to, make high profits. And people that deal with coins in large volumes, are really hard to track and see if we're really getting our fair share of tax out of them.
Well, what's the alternate vision, David? What needs to be done rather than this Third Street realignment, rather than La Bahia project, rather than the proposed widening of all of the roads down there, and rather than this giveaway, what do you suggest as an alternate vision in that area?
Well, there is one part of it that I've always been kind of interested in, and that's the part where the tourist traffic is split or diverted across the Soquel Bridge and comes down Front Street. I think development of our riverbank with even a boardwalk, kind of like San Antonio kind of boardwalk off of the riverbank, that those Front Street businesses could have some of the high quality, nice community feeling that it does at the rich end of North Pacific Avenue, who seem to have gotten all the development money. Of course, they're the big property, the big profit, so they get the big votes, because voting is there, not a one business one vote voting operation. But it seems to me that we could have a real nice looking town with just some decks on those riverbanks and wrapping around with some coffee shops around, like the dance studio. There could be a coffee shop that goes right up to the deck, right over the river, and people could enjoy the river. It could be ecologically sound. But that's
it's illegal to be on the river.
Well, perhaps the homeless people could sleep underneath those decks. I don't know, but
sleeping is illegal.
Yeah, I know. Well, delivering two more additional packets, we're still pushing on the sleeping van. Two packets yesterday to people near the beach area. I went into the La Bahia, and it'd been a long time since I've been in La Bahia. That's pretty nice place it is. I mean, I hear so many people talk about it like we're cleaning out the scum hotel. Excuse me, it's a very nice little place. It could be improved very slightly, polished up and made to look nice. And if we can find some way to, in water and traffic, sustain a convention center, I think it probably would only happen at some other location, rather than having people come clear through town and disrupt all our traffic flow and have to build a bridge over the river where it's widest, and all these things that they say they have to do and yet have no solutions. This environmental impact report and this plan are very, very short on how they think we're going to get there. I think we're being conned, to tell you the truth. It sounds like somebody's being conned, that's really all not going to happen. They better start breaking it down into units, and the very first unit that they need to solve is, if there's going to be displacement, we need to have guarantees that these people will get their home, their community, their neighborhood back, or that they will get, some immediate and continued relief. This thing of the formulas that they have now are just not sufficient to prevent destroying a human neighborhood. A human neighborhood which contains a community garden, which, now the city council is voting on studying paving that over for a parking lot.
You're listening to David Silva on Bathrop Spears Broadsides here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Robert Norris. Every Thursday from 6 to 8, you get to hear us review the issues of the day, particularly as regarding homeless people and civil rights for the poor. I'd like to turn now briefly, David, if I can.
To university housing?
Not exactly, no. I want to turn instead to San Diego. At this moment, there are 150 to 200 protesters in front of City Hall in San Diego, have been for the last 2 months. They moved to the Horton Plaza Shopping Center in order to broaden their demonstration against essentially businesses that have been anti-homeless. But mainly the concern was that the city is not spending the money that it had promised to spend on basic shelter, that instead they've essentially looted certain federal properties under the Stuart McKinney Act, whose funding is supposed to go to homeless folks, and they haven't delivered that money. And so you have thousands and thousands of homeless people in San Diego without shelter, and who are now standing up and saying something about it. And I guess over the weekend they occupied the Naval Training Center area, and they were arrested for it. And it finally caught the attention of the media and the politicians. I'm going to play now.
I'll still, of course, Robert, have the opportunity to have some blatant public service announcements regarding the sleeping ban, regarding our future governor, Dan Hamburg, from the Green Party, being in town, right?
Your unpaid political announcements are always welcome here, David. Hopefully Scott Kennedy will join you, and the two of you can make them in counterpoint. But again, I want to apologize to our listeners. Actually, I've got nothing to apologize for, but unfortunately, Scott Kennedy, for a third time in a week and a half period, canceled again because he said he's at
a homeless community resource center meeting that maybe it's really, really interesting one.
It might be really interesting, but it's probably closed to the public because Homeless Community Resource Center Director Karen Gillette, and she still is just that, a Homeless Community Resource Director, has ruled those meetings closed. And that was one of, I guess, the stumbling blocks in the merger between her board and the Board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which runs other homeless services here in Santa Cruz, namely the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program and the so-called Community House Project, which I've gone on about at great length and has essentially destroyed the campground that was there before. Let's turn, however, to San Diego and